This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 420 kelvins to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it? Yeah, I think it's working. I guess it's my turn to do some solo stuff. And as always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT, no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. All right. So, I'm here. I'm Jeremy. What's up, everybody? Just got finished listening to a show earlier today where Lou did a hour solo last week, so I guess I'm being tested this time because Cal is here, sort of, kind of. I think I can hear him when he talks, but I can't, he can't hear me, so having a conversation is probably going to be difficult, but we'll try to work that out at some point. So, yeah, if voice of God, if you're listening, Cal, he can't hear us for some reason. I don't know. Probably something on his end. You know, it's what you get when you deal with the beautiful people.
I can hear you now.
Hey, there's Cal. All right. What's going on, man? Thanks for joining me.
It's going, buddy. It's going.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good. I wasn't really in a mood to do a solo show tonight anyway, so Lou can keep that game for himself. I don't know. If I want to do a show by myself, I'll just put myself in front of a microphone and talk, you know, here in my home at a normal hour, not at 1 o'clock in the morning. So anyway, well, yeah, it's good to talk to you, man.
Right.
Last time I saw you, we didn't really get to speak. When I ran into you, well, briefly saw you in Michigan, but I was at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. I was just way too busy with my kids, so I didn't really have time for too many conversations this year. But it's I've been listening to the shows you've made it on. It's good to hear you here. You're an interesting fellow, man. I think we had you back on my other show, the Seeds of Liberty, way back when too. I think I was trying to look that up before the show, but I remember when I first became aware of you. I think, I don't even remember who it was. Just somebody sent me a video and were like, you have to watch this guy. And it was you giving a talk in front of like a middle school, a group of middle schoolers, I think. Maybe high schoolers. I don't know. But I was just like mesmerized by not only the fact that you kept their attention, but the fact that you got in the door at all. How do you go about doing something like that? Like, how do you get a public school or something of that nature to actually let you walk in the door and speak to the children about this terrible thing of anarchy? Hello. Did I lose you again, Cal?
Can you hear me now?
I've been able to hear you. Did you hear anything I was just saying? Oh, yeah, it's going to be a delay because of Skype. Well, did you get my question there, or...?
Yeah, I heard you. So there's there's a couple of students who have been a fan of the show, and they've been they're the ones who I would I give credit to bringing me on board. They had like one student brought in like a Republican speaker, another student brought someone from the Democratic Party, and then to even it out, one of the students wanted to balance it out by bringing an anarchist to class, and was me. So that's pretty much how that went down here locally in Richmond at James River High School. The funny thing is, during the afternoon, somebody was talking about an announcement saying like we have an archaeologist coming to talk at the library.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, like I said, that I'm pretty sure that was my first introduction to you. And like I said, I was just floored. I was like, this is amazing. And like, I immediately went to look to see if I could do something similar. And the people in the local school district here just kind of laughed at me. They're like, oh, that's nice. Yeah, go away now. We don't want that dirty talk here in our school. but that's definitely a way to get outreach that I think most people don't think of. You know, because then after I saw that, then I, of course, I had to know who you were and what, you know, I was like, who is this guy and how does he get to do these wonderful things?
So I ended up watching some, you know, tracking you down and finding out some more information about you. And I think this was talked about briefly during your first, one of your first shows, but you know, the fact that you go out and you do those videos out in the street, usually, I guess one of the campuses, what is it? Is it the Virginia campus or one of the campuses around Virginia somewhere? They usually just go hang out and with a sign that says, ask you about things, and people actually come up and talk to you, which is crazy because I try to do that here in New York and people just look at me funny. And I don't even know if you're there now because I'm getting messages from you saying that you're going to try another computer, but I'll just keep talking. So yeah, because I try to do stuff like that here in New York, and I wanted to do more of it, but people are just so unreceptive here. And despite the complaints they will make about even the local government around here, when you try to do something to like affect a change in any way, then people are just too busy for you and they don't want to give you the time of day, which is sad. But you know, I think going after the youth, as scummy as that can sound, because you know, people think of things like, you know, Hitler trying to get control of the youth in Germany and stuff like that, but hey man, you got to hit them while they're young. And you know, I indoctrinate my own kids regularly. I'm just kidding, of course. I do not indoctrinate my children. Are you back yet, Cal? No? This guy. There you are. Wow, there's a crazy delay today.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I got you. Anyway, I was just bloviating until you made it back. But yeah, so I was saying, you know, I think the fact that you went out there and did that, and then you go out and you did these other videos and stuff where you get people, you know, kind of that man on the street type thing, or just actually just sitting there and having people come to you and ask questions. I don't have the patience for it. I don't know where you get the patience for it. Where do you get the patience for it, Cal? Well, that's not going to work. We got the 6 seconds.
Younger siblings. I have a brother and a sister, and yeah.
Oh, okay. I see.
Yeah, so a lot of attention gets back.
Gotcha. Yeah, I have younger siblings. Never mattered to me, though. Probably because I wasn't patient with them. So I just wanted to get away from them as I was growing up. So, but I think, like I was saying, I tried to do similar stuff around here, and people are just so, you know, people just look at me funny. You know, of course, I guess it's understandable because, I mean, you look at the reaction of what happened to me earlier this year and people just saw an A on my shirt and just automatically assumed the worst. I can imagine if I actually started talking to them about my beliefs, what they would think. But yeah, these right, as long yeah, as, as yeah. Yeah, this delay is horrible. It's like 10 seconds later, you're finally hearing me, which is not conducive for radio because we got that alarm at 6 seconds that's going to start blaring in somebody's ear because we're silent. But see if we can get this worked out during the break. But anyway, like I was trying to say, you know, I think if anybody can get out there and make progress, and if you have the patience for it, great. You know, I've encouraged other people who have more patience to pick up the slack for me and stuff like that, but still nobody wants to do it around here, and I can't really blame them. I mean, I spent the first couple years of my young anarchist life convinced that since I was stuck here in New York that I could make a difference here because I had that whole attitude, you know. If you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. My attitude was, well, if I can change minds here, then nobody has an excuse. Because if I can get one of these crazy New Yorkers to actually think somewhere along the lines that I do, then that means anybody anywhere can get people to think this stuff. It's not really that hard. And I was pretty stubborn about that for a couple of years. And then I finally realized that really, really nobody cares. You know, because you're talking about how you got invited to that school because they were having debates and they were actually open enough to have a third view. The only time I ever came anywhere close to that was a friend of mine was hosting events up here on Long Island for a while. Former friend of mine now. She has since stopped talking to me. I don't think she's a fan of mine anymore. I became too radical for her. But she was a member of the Libertarian Party up here, and she was hell-bent on raising attention to certain issues. And, you know, she was a little more on the tinfoil hat side, so she was a little outraged about everything. But she had a debate. She actually got a debate hosted in some local venue for healthcare, and had like a Republican. I think it was actually somebody who was currently running for office or somebody who had held office here. And then a local Democrat who was actually in the healthcare system, and she wanted to flesh it out. And I was the only person who was like, yeah, I'll get up there and talk. So we had a Libertarian, a Republican, a Democrat, and an anarchist arguing healthcare. And I sat there. The other two guys were super prepared. I just kind of like wung it because I told her from the beginning, you know, this really isn't my forte. But if you want me to come and talk, I'll come and talk. You know, I talk. I don't really debate. Like, it's not my thing. I don't, you know, I'll do it, but I'm not going to actually prepare for a formal debate. So I went out there and I listened to the... You know, I listened to both sides, and when I gave my rebuttal, like nobody in the audience could argue with me about pretty much anything I said, which was basically, you know, I was against the whole this. You know, this was way back when Obamacare was just starting. I was against the whole thing on principle, and then I ran down my list of everything that was wrong with it, and not a single person could disagree with me. But in the end, they still only cared enough about that they wanted to agree with me because they thought that I didn't like Obama. Because when it came down to it, even though they couldn't disagree with my points, they were still good little statists, and they were just right. They were the right wing variety, which was sad. Because, you know, at one point I actually asked them if they were too afraid of their government to do anything, and every single person in the room nodded their head up and down. And I almost walked out because I was like, what's the point then? You're not even going to try. Silly, silly people.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Worms.
And we're back. And I think we've taken care of the technical... I was going to say we've taken care of the technical difficulties, but I can't even get the phrase technical difficulties out of my mouth right now. So maybe we haven't, but I think we fixed some stuff up, and now the delay between Cal and I is much, much, much more short. So I think we can actually hold a conversation. So welcome back, everybody. We'll start the show over again. Take two. And anyway, hi, Cal. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Jeremy.
So I rambled on through the first segment. I don't know if you were able to hear all of what I was saying.
Yeah, no. Good question you had was patience, right? How do you get the patience? And I was just saying that I have siblings, and you know, there's a lot of patience that goes in explaining a lot of things to them, and it's so much like I don't get angry at them when they don't get things or understand things. I kind of have the same kind of attitude towards new people I meet, right? Because, you know, a lot of this is like anarchy 101, and I can't get angry at them, you know. much of like in the childhood wonder that they have about, you know, the roads and all these sort of things. So I can't kind of reflect that. I will approach my manner differently if it's communists, of course. But you know, that's kind of rare in between, but for everyone else, you know, I think the approach is, that comes that when they come to me asking these questions out of, you know, curiosity or humor, And I think that's a great place to start these conversations.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, like I was saying before, like, I mean, I obviously could learn from that because patience is what it's funny. Like, I know I have that, like, I guess, almost teaching instinct in me. I don't know the better way to describe it, from like that regard in certain fields, like, you know, cause I've run my own pet sitting business for over a dozen years. So, and usually when it comes to anything about animals, you know, people need me to explain stuff. I could sit there and explain to things to people for like forever, and I could be patient and I'll, you know, go over it and, you know, they'll ask me questions, whether it's my kids, whether it's other people's kids, what, you know, whatever. But other areas, I'm just like, my mind just immediately shuts down. And even though I know better, like when you, like what you said makes perfect sense to me. And I know that going into a lot of conversations, but I just find myself so frustrated sometimes because I'm just like, okay, this really isn't rocket science. You're not getting it yet. I give up. Like, what the heck?
and it works for me. Maybe it's, you know, it's something that's tailored differently for everyone. But at this method or going about it, I've made a lot of friends, anarchists, just going about and just doing this. I have one of my roommates, her zone, on you know, day one going out there, like meeting him within like the first week is like, you know, I think I identify as an anarchist. You know, that sounds very logical. He was like a engineering student at my local university. So like the argument against the state for free markets was easy. And, you know, that's been like 5 years now since I've known him. So I kind of look at like each kind of meeting with these people as like subsequent potential friends, you know, building that tribe of free marketeers.
Yeah, that's you know, that's a great attitude to have. And like I said, I could definitely learn from it. I probably should have by now, because especially where I've been stuck for the past couple of years, ever since I came to all these realizations, and, you know, still being stuck here in New York, anarchists are obviously few and far between. Although it's funny, as with a lot of things in life, it seems to take tragedy to bring certain information to light. Like after everything that happened to me earlier this year, I all of a sudden realized there's a lot more people out here, because I've been hearing from people, even just as recently as like a couple of days ago, I think. Somebody commented on some, I posted a video after my last court appearance, and somebody posted, how did I not know you were here? I'm like, I'm in such and such a town, which is literally like, you know, 20 minutes away from me. And I had no idea this entire time. Guy's been on my friends list for years now, I think. And, you know, I don't get out there, but, I probably should have, because that was the intent I had. You know, I was saying that earlier about that whole, you know, thinking I could, if I could make it here, or if I could make a difference here. And I wanted to do that. I wanted to lay groundwork and try to do that. But I just got myself way too frustrated and, you know, got myself involved in a whole bunch of other stuff. And then I made the decision that I wanted to get out of here a couple of years ago, and I've just been working towards that. So I just stopped caring. And I'm just like, yeah. Because, like, there were so many times I meant to reach out to you after originally finding out what you guys were doing down there in Virginia. And I was like, oh, I could start a Liberate thing up here in Long Island. Why not? And I should do that. And I should reach out to Cal and talk about starting that. And I said that to myself, like, I don't know, at least 50 times over the past couple of years. Never did it.
Never too late.
Worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
About a warning. You're about to share with my friend Michael W. Dean, a survivor, thinks about humanity and his methods for dealing with it. Brace yourself for some bare naked honesty. If you're willing to hear what Michael is saying, there are times when you'll laugh and times when you'll want to cry in the retelling of his truths. He has defined it so you can feel it. Take his example and live. I warned you earlier because this book is written in the same way Michael speaks. He's a straight shooter, a no pretense, a no excuses kind of guy that I love like a brother. Understanding how we are to deal with negative people, Michael has answers for you. The human race has its aberrations and monsters, and unfortunately, sometimes they are close to you. Michael gives you his take on them and how he handles the noise. I can guarantee you will pick up a tool to use from a user's manual for the human experience. As Michael says, his life is a teaching hospital.
A user's manual for the human experience. Kindle, paperback, and audiobook. Get it now on Amazon.
Yeah.
And we're back. I was just noticing during the break, I was looking at my phone, and not only has Bitcoin shot past $12,000, but it looks like it's knocking on the door at 13 currently. That's exciting.
Oh my God.
I always like seeing that. As sad as I was the other day, I finally got myself a hardware wallet to put some of my cryptos in. And as sad as I was to open up my mobile wallet and not see that large figure anymore, I still get excited when I see numbers climbing.
Right.
What exciting.
So are you one of those, are you a secret Bitcoin millionaire?
Oh, yeah, I wish. No. I was listening to that be talked about too. Yeah, no, I know. I wish I was. Unfortunately, I didn't get in nearly early. I mean, I didn't even get into Bitcoin till a couple of years ago. Although I'm still one of the lucky ones, because when I first finally got into Bitcoin was the last time it dropped down to like $200, I think.
Yeah.
Because I bought my original three and somewhere in the 250 range. I didn't either have the courage, or actually the cojones, I guess it wasn't so much courage. I didn't have the cojones to put more money into it then, so it did not pay off for me as well as it has for other people. But you know,
it's on something.
I'm doing all right.
Of what it's on something that a secret Bitcoin millionaire would say.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I heard Michael and Daryl talking about that. I think it was last night's show. They were talking about that Or no, was it last week with you and Lou? I don't even remember. I listened to two shows today. But there was, you know, the whole fact that there's people out there and they won't say it. Well, of course they won't say it. I mean, look what keeps happening. Look what the IRS is doing.
Right.
You know, do you really blame people? Yeah. I mean, of course I could say that I am or I'm not, and people could believe it or not. But most people who know me or pay any attention to me know that I'm not very tech savvy. So even if I was a secret Bitcoin millionaire, I probably wouldn't hide it very well. So, I'm sure you'd know. And plus, I'd have to be a real scumbag to be a Bitcoin billionaire or even millionaire and still be occasionally cyber begging for money right. Because of my legal situation and stuff like that. That'd be pretty messed up of me to do.
It'd be a good cover, though.
It would. You're right. See, I'm sinking my own ship here. I should just stop talking. I'm giving away all my trade secrets. Darn it, Cal. Look what you got me into. But yeah, so yeah, no, I wish I was. I'm still trying to be. I'm trying to, you know, with the little amount of crypto I have to play with, since I have no FRNs to currently be putting into it. I'm trying to move things around, and you know, just like everybody else, trying to hop on the next big thing.
Yeah, it's never too late. You know, at least exactly. you're ahead of the curve of the people who are yet to be born, who don't have the lead to invest or get some.
There you go. You know, and heck, you know, I'm we've talked about this on the show before. I recently tried to get into the crypto mining game. You know, so there's plenty of ways to get in. It's definitely not too late. And I think I said it on Sunday night. If an idiot like me can figure out how to buy a bunch of computer parts and put together a mining rig, and actually, you know, somebody who's virtually computer illiterate in a lot of areas can figure out all that stuff, anybody can do this. You know, it's, doesn't take a lot.
Yeah.
Anyway, shifting gears, I did actually have a story that I wanted to talk about that kind of ties into something that Daryl and Michael were talking about last night, and I think they actually talked about last week too, and I've been meaning to talk about for a while. It kind of centers around the whole idea of ostracism, which is something that we, to mouse pocket a little bit, we anarchists and libertarians often talk about as a solution for, you know, dispute resolution in the stateless society that all of us envision, however we actually envision that to be. You know, most of us do hold, at least at the core, most of us hold the fact that we want the state to be gone. So, you know, whatever we see that being is one thing. But, you know, getting to that point, most of us are in somewhat agreement on. But, you know, ostracism gets thrown out there a lot. And the idea of, you know, essentially shaming bad actors into either shaping up or just at least pointing out that they are indeed bad actors so that nobody will do business with them therefore, you know, from then on out, to try to help curb bad actions in a society so that people can lead a more peaceful life. And I've, you know, talked about this a lot in the past, and I've always, ever since I heard about the idea and thought about it long enough, I was like, oh, that makes sense, sure, you know. And, you know, even you just look at it from a perspective of things that happen right now, like, you know, rating systems, whether it's Yelp or Angie's List or even the Amazon rating system or eBay or, you know, any of these companies that do this type of stuff, they all have these, you know, these things. And that's basically what it's about. It's, you know, it's a reputation system. And if people provide a bad product or a bad service, and then a whole bunch of people get on there and lambast them and say, oh, this was horrible, I, you know, whatever, it costs too much money, or they ripped me off, or whatever it is, you know, people look at that and then go, oh, well, I don't want to use this service because so many people are complaining about it. And that's basically a form of ostracism. So for me, it's kind of been settled where it's like, oh, yeah, that's, of course, that's a tool that we'll use. And then you fast forward a couple of years, and I've thought about it some more, and then I ran into my own situation earlier this year, which is, and then the topic of this particular article from the Libertarian Institute, which is titled The Online Lynching of a Lynn, Massachusetts Coffee House, which obviously different scenario, but the same outcome, where people go out of their way to ostracize a person or their business, but they do so with the sole intent of destroying said person or business. And it doesn't necessarily have to, you know, facts don't have to matter. It's when it comes to stuff like this, it's, you know, emotions take over, and people just, you know, hear what they want to hear, read what they want to read, or, you know, believe what they want to believe about what a person has said or done or whatever. And they take it to an extreme where, like in my situation, a lot of people got upset by a particular word that I used, and then went out of their way to try to smear me everywhere and every way they possibly could, in order, and it wasn't to just punish me. Well, I mean, that's what they believe they were doing, I think. But I think the larger issue is that that type of mentality is really not necessarily about shaming the person into good behavior, but it's really about shaming the person into conformity, which I have a problem with. I don't know about you, but I guess it
depends on the community that you're in, right? And the kind of norms that follow, like the Amish do the same thing. They ostracize. They don't have stockades. They don't have jails or anything like that. People who break the norms of that community are ostracized. And I guess it's separate from like an online lynching. It's more of a social lynching. But yeah, I could see the other side of it too, where it can get out of control, especially a lack of evidence. And particularly in this case, it was kind of disheartening to see. You've gone into it a little bit, where the owner was trying to create a Walk of Cop event at her cafe, but her daughter publicly said otherwise, right? Was very much against it. And that's how it started off and kicked off. One thing, though, from this that I find to be kind of troublesome is that in her attempt to show people that she's not against cops, that she's not anti-cop, the cops themselves never showed up, right, to help her. The cops, she invited them to her cafe to try to have a conversation. She's trying to reach out to them to show them that, you know, she's not this pariah, right? But the police never even bothered to respond to that, right? So I think that kind of goes back maybe towards her daughter's point that they're not really there to help.
Yeah, exactly. You know, to flesh that story out a little bit more. Yeah, that's basically what happened. She tried to put it on an event, and her daughter just went out on Facebook and was like, "This will never happen," because, you know, her daughter obviously worked there too. I think she was a manager, and yeah. She was just like, "This is not going to happen," because, you know, and she wasn't nasty about it. She wasn't like, you know, FTP or anything like that, or like cursing about the police, and just basically matter of factly stated that the police are not there to help, and that she doesn't want that associated with her business, which, you know, you want to talk about she's well within her rights to say that or whatever, that's a whole different issue. But so she goes out and say this, and even though her mother not only tried to publicly apologize on behalf of her bakery, so that, you know, because the S storm that came down on her daughter obviously didn't just affect her daughter. People didn't go after the daughter. People went after the bakery itself, which is, again, something that happened in my situation. I said something that upset people. I said it in the capacity of my business, but it had nothing to do with my business, but people went out of their way to destroy my business because of it, because people want to try to hurt you because you've hurt their feelings, not just try to hurt your feelings in return. But despite her not only trying to publicly say, you know, I don't agree with my daughter on this, this was her, she wasn't speaking on behalf of the bakery, and then she went beyond that and fired her own daughter, you know, to further state, to try to separate herself from this and say, this is not me. I was actively trying to reach out by trying to host this event in the first place. And then, like you said, despite all that, she then went after the fact to the local police to try to have a sit down with them and offered them to come into come into her place, and she, you know, would assumingly feed them and give them drinks and be like, here, let's just have a chat, you know, so you could see that that's my daughter, this is me, we're two separate people, she doesn't even work here anymore. And the police didn't even have the decency, not even to show to have the decency to show up, they didn't even have the decency to respond. Yeah. So, you know, what does that say about them in the first place? Like you said, probably that, you know, maybe her daughter had a point.
Right. Her daughter, I could say, said it best. What did she say? She said that at best, police collect legal slaves for the state and are at worst murderers.
I think that says it all. We'll have to talk more about this when we get back from market. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends Radio Show. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgoristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agorist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, go with AgoristHosting.com.
And we're back, and apparently I'm back just in time. A little momentary glitch, weird. Internet went out on only one computer for like 10 seconds. Never seen that happen before. Anyway, guess I should learn to expect stuff like this from my house. I think we've talked about this before. Actually, I think there was an episode named after that about the fact that I have to actually, you know, Michael tells everybody to restart their, you know, reboot their computers and also their routers and modems and stuff like that about an hour before showtime, so everything's up and running and fresh and stuff like that. But I actually have to take one step further. I actually have to reboot my entire house because of all the weird electrical issues I have here. So about once a month, I actually have to kill the electricity to my entire house for like a minute and then kick everything back on to try to reboot things. So I shouldn't be surprised when weird things happen. But anyway, in the last segment, we were talking about ostracism overall, but also particularly this one article from the Libertarian Institute about how this coffee house up in Massachusetts received a online lynching from internet trolls and defenders of police and all sorts of stuff. And because, you know, they made a public, you know, they publicly tried to host an event to welcome the police, and there was a disagreement between the mother and the daughter who ran the place, and the daughter spoke out, and there was a backlash. And not only did you know, like we were saying before, not only did the mom, the owner, actually try to reach out to the police afterwards to not even get a response, but the abuse they took, because again, it wasn't just people were mad and upset, so they told them they were mad and upset. They went out of their way to try to destroy these people because there was, you know, among just the hateful messages and the blatant lies, like this is a common tactic in situations like this. I see it all the time when people call out for a boycott, whether they're justified in their call for such actions or not, and they get a bunch of people to hop on, you know, especially on like social media with like Facebook. If you have a Facebook page, people will just flood those pages and give the place one star review, and they'll usually just make stuff up. You know, they won't even have, you know, in a situation like this, they probably wouldn't have ever stepped into this coffee shop, maybe not even stepped into the town or even the state that this place is in, but they'll write, oh, the coffee was horrible, the service was horrible. People, like, you know, there's one in particular they quoted in the articles, you know, saying that the coffee tasted like bleach and all this other stuff. Like, clearly not an accurate portrayal. If you read all the reviews that came in before this incident, like, all there was nothing but positive stuff, and everybody always had great things to say about this place and how it was and how the owner was specifically trying to foster an idea of community with her shop. It wasn't just about running a business, you know, inviting people in and giving a place for artists to display their work and musicians to play for free and stuff like that. So, you know, people would just go out of their way to bash these things. But then they were also there were death threats given to the daughter and the mother. And I'm sure other people, too, just like what happened with me. You know, when people were mad at the words I used, I received death threats for it. My kids received death threats. Family members and friends of mine received death threats for it. So people just go completely insane with this stuff. And, you know, in this situation, you know, with this particular coffee house, you know, not only did they have to endure all that, and not only did the owner attempt to in every way, like she offered a public apology on behalf of the coffee house, and it didn't stop, you know, which to me, that struck a chord when I read that, because I remember back to my situation where family members of mine, before they ended up effectively disowning me because of this whole situation, were urging me to apologize because it would make everything better. And I kept saying at the time, no, it won't. Like, you don't understand the internet culture, especially these days. Like, this stuff, it, like, sure, things can get not such as necessarily swept under the rug, but they can get forgotten about because the next big story comes. But an apology doesn't matter. And like with this situation, it didn't, because nobody cared. They kept coming, to the point where not only did she end up having to close the shop down, she ended up selling her condo, changing her name, and relocating, all over some words on a screen that people got upset about. I hate the world most of the time.
Well, maybe this is something for people to realize. Maybe the families should kind of be on the same page of things.
Yeah, that'll probably help.
Yeah.
But with that, we're going to head off to the market. And we'll be back in the second hour. Worms.
Ever struggle for the right thing to say at a party? Want something to break the ice? Get the free Freedom Fiends Android app, Pocket Alibi. Pocket Alibi will help you have things to say. It'll replace verbal communication when you're not speaking with somebody.
I value your input.
It'll make you the hit of any party.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Will it work?
Not a guarantee.
It's a great icebreaker, too. Comes loaded with hundreds of original funny sayings with great voices and great recording quality. It's arranged into 7 categories. Disclaimers.
You should never do the thing I'm talking about.
Excuses.
I'm sorry, sir. An older girl told me to do it.
Advice. Fun too.
Get off me, kitty.
Libertarian pickup lines.
Hey, baby, hold my camera while I yell at this meter maid.
State speech is hate speech.
Bark, bark for the state.
Get Pocket Alibi today on Google Play for free. Again, search for Pocket Alibi. That's Pocket Alibi, A-L-I-B-I.
Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi.
Does this app make me look fat?
Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting to the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Peace Plaza, on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017, in the Alpha Centauri region. As always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a PIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at pipcot.org. All right, so we're back for the second hour. I am Jeremy, joined tonight by Cal. What's up, Cal?
What up?
And we left off in the first hour. We were talking about the overall topic of ostracization, but specifically about this one particular case, this poor coffee house up in Massachusetts that got destroyed by a deluge of online trolls and people all upset because the words of one of the workers there, the daughter of the owner, who made some comments that were less than positive about the police in the area or just police overall. And the defenders of said police came out in droves. And I wouldn't be surprised if there were, you know, kind of the government type trolls that are out in force in every other conversation out there too. I wouldn't be surprised if they were part of that whole thing too, getting that started. But just that whole idea of, you know, ostracization being something that we talk about as libertarians and anarchists as being a good way to, you know, help shape a community, you know, absent the state. But on the extreme end of that is when it can backfire and you just have these situations like what happened with this coffee house or what happened with me, where people get all upset and bent out of shape over some words and then they go above and beyond and then they just destroy people's reputations. And you know, and then what do you do about that? Because then it's like, well, this is the tool you said we should use, and now people are using it as a bludgeon and just beating people to death with it. And I don't know if it's always going to work out so well. But another, you know, on that same vein of like doing it at least online and stuff like that, because that's how most people handle this stuff in this day and age. Because why would they get off their couch to do anything? They could just do it from the ease of their home. You know, when people go out and do stuff like this, it's interesting because, like in my situation, there was like death threats and all this stuff hurled at me, but nothing happens to the people who do that. You know, like even in Facebook land where people report everybody over everything because they get offended over everything. And, you know, I constantly see the list of, you know, people on my list on social media reporting in from their different accounts because they've been banned for one thing or another. And but when people turn around and act, you know, so like that's the people are constantly getting banned for offending one another. But a bunch of people tried to turn around and report all these people in my situation that were actually, you know, making actual threats. And, you know, nothing happens to people like that. But when you're the one who goes out and does it, especially, you know, if it involves a government agent, they take that a lot more seriously. And then you could actually get in trouble for this. Which leads to another story that I had about law responding to emojis. The title of the article is actually "How Law Responds When It should have been emojis. That's actually written pretty badly. Are the weapon of choice, and it actually talks about people who have been who have been arrested and in some places in charged with stuff, and in some places actually I think around the world convicted. So far, most of the people that it's happened to in the United States have the charges didn't stick. But for making posts on social media and using specific emojis that now are people decide, like the law is trying to figure out ways to, if it actually constitutes a threat. And like that just brings it in a whole other world to me, especially when we're in this age where so many people like kind of speak in that language, especially, you know, the millennials tend to speak in the language of emoji.
Right. Yeah. And I'm kind of curious now if other emojis can be deemed racist, right? You know, like the OK symbol emoji. If I were to put that on my wall, does that signify that I am a racist now? Since, you know, there's a lot of trolls out there trying to co-opt that and make it seem something else. Or even the frog emoji and make it look that looks like Pepe the Frog. And which Hillary Clinton and her campaign tried to deem it as a hate symbol. You know, so it's not just emojis, it's also I guess little pictures, you know, that kind of go out there like on Facebook that could be interpreted otherwise. There was, like, for example, something that came out recently in which students were getting suspended for liking, you know, racist memes. You know, everything these days are racist, you know. So now it's getting really out of hand, I think. I don't know, maybe not, in terms of emojis of like depiction of guns. And that's where some of these people are getting in trouble and sending these to people. You know, emoji of a person with a punch, another emoji with a finger pointing, and the other third emoji would be an ambulance. Like they're going to punch you and send you to the hospital. So yeah, I think it's a interesting new realm of a speech that I haven't really thought about or encountered myself in terms of bad responses with emojis. I've received good responses with emojis. I've never received threatening emoji responses. So I guess that's a thing now.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I mean as I've mentioned multiple times in this show, and I've mentioned before, I mean, I'm not very tech savvy, and I barely know how to use emojis as it is. Like I use like some of the smiley faces, you know, and the thumbs up. Like that's the extent of my emojis. You know, occasionally on the Telegram app, I'll use more because I use that more often, and I'm kind of used to it. And it's usually just, you know, private conversations. Or a group chat with a couple of my closer friends, so I'm okay there. But for the most part, I didn't even, like, when I see some of this stuff, I'm like, they actually have emojis for that? I haven't, because I don't see them, I don't use them. But it is crazy that, you know, so many people use this stuff, but now, because like you said, you hadn't really considered this. I hadn't either. It doesn't even cross my mind. But that people will take this, you know, like I said, certain threats they seem to take very seriously, but other ones that, you know, are very explicit threats, sometimes they don't, and it really just does, you know, seem to appear who the target is, I guess, because, you know, like in my situation, nobody seemed to care. But then again, it's like I had taken a giant bite out of some sacred cows, so I'm sure I angered a lot of people, and people are less likely to care that I'm actually being threatened with physical violence over my words, or if I had used an emoji, whatever. Is there a parasite emoji? I wonder. If there isn't, somebody should get on that for me. That'd be great. I'd appreciate that. Send it over. You can send it over to me.
Yeah, I have problems sometimes accidentally, like, pressing emojis. I'm not an emoji kind of guy. I don't send emojis. But like sometimes my Facebook, you know, finger slipped and like I put like one of the smiley emojis, you know. So how do you know like some of these emojis are purposeful or some of these are on accident? Are you responsible for accidental emojis? Like if someone were to send a message or hijack your Facebook account and send out messages, or are you responsible for that? How can they prove it was you, right, and not someone else? Especially these days with sock accounts being anyone can make sock accounts and fake accounts, going back to like online mob lynching.
Yeah, that's actually, I hadn't even considered that either. I was just thinking, you know, it could be accidental stuff, but even stuff that basically, I guess, theoretically couldn't be an accident. Like, you know, specifically, like you mentioned the gun emoji earlier. You know, there's one specific case that's mentioned in this article. And I vaguely remember this one because it happened here in good old New Yorkistan. But a 17-year-old was actually charged with making a terrorist threat because he posted an emoji. He posted the policeman emoji and three guns. Now it says that the guns were pointing towards it, but the gun just points one way or the other on the screen, depending on like what the emoji is. That's just the way it is. And depending on how you line it up, of course it could be pointing at it. And, you know, to me, somebody posting that is no different, you know, posting a policeman emoji with one gun, three guns, 20 guns pointed in the direction of the police, you know. And it actually even said, I think, that in the case they specified that it was pointed at the policeman's head. I'm like, well, that's ridiculous, because these things all go on the same line of text. So, of course, if you have the head of a policeman as one emoji and then the gun is the next one, of course it's going to be pointed at the policeman's head. That's just kind of how the whole thing lines up. You can't really avoid that. That's just insane. I think that's reaching. But, you know, that, like I said, that's kind of hard to be accidental, I guess, to have those four in a row. And even if you want to take out of the equation the possibility that somebody else may have posted that, like, to me, that's no more of an actual threat than somebody playing NWA's F the Police. You know, like...
Yeah. Yeah,
like I don't like, you know, even take the whole free speech thing out of the equation, because I always hate the conversations about free speech, because I'm ever since I realized what kind of BS the Constitution actually is, I've cared less and less about those silly freedoms that it's supposed to protect. Because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, most people when they start rambling on about free speech, I just tune out immediately, because I'm like, you're not going to say much of anything intelligent, because, you know, you don't actually recognize the fact that if you're going to play the game that the government is legitimate and whatnot. It's only supposed to pertain to things about the government. It's not supposed to be for these private entities. And if they want to shut you down, or they want to take you off, you know, Facebook wants to ban you, or Twitter wants to okay, you don't have free speech there. There is no free speech isn't something that's universal, because you don't have it. You can't walk into my house and say whatever the heck you want without me telling you to get out. And if you don't, I will physically remove you, so to speak. You know, like, you don't have that. So there isn't this universal free speech. So I get agitated to the point of just blocking people out when they start talking about it. But even if you just want to take that out of the equation too, it's just the fact that, you know, like I said, it's people are saying it because they're upset, or they may think it, but to me, it's no different than playing the song. It's not an actual threat, you know. That's just, I don't know, it's insanity, man. Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
And we're back. And in the last segment, we were talking about this article about people actually getting in trouble with the law for using emojis, and because now they are being considered threats in a bunch of different situations. I mean, there was, you know, the article specifically talks about a case, you know, there's a case in New Zealand, and there's a case in France where somebody was actually convicted for threatening his ex-girlfriend by a text message for using the gun emoji. There was a kid in New York here that actually got charged as a making a terrorist threat for using the gun emoji and a policeman emoji. So, you know, and the whole fact that this dips into what a lot of people argue about free speech, and that's kind of where we left off in the last segment. Me blathering on about the fact that there is no free speech. That's a government term as far as I'm concerned, and that's why if you actually pay attention to the government's own rules, the whole idea of free speech is only supposed to apply to the government, and the government's not supposed to allow you, is not supposed to be able to stop you from speaking freely. It doesn't talk about anybody else in the private sector anywhere about what they can and can't tell you what not to say. Although if you go by what the current culture is like, you would, you know, if you were just stepping into it for the first time, you would not get that idea, because it does seem that you can be punished, because it does happen, especially in the SJW culture, where everybody's offended about everything and people are constantly trying to get you punished for what you say, what you think, and now apparently what emojis you use. So yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I think it's you know, the areas in which people kind of forget about free speech. It's you know, it's property rights that we're really talking about here, right? You know, people have free speech, you could say, quote unquote, on public property, but that also comes with the kinds of you can say free speech or hate speech stuff, or noises that you just don't want to hear, like Westboro Baptist Church protesting funerals because they could go on public property since nobody owns it, and go outside your house at late night hours, or anyone else really, or your place of business, because it's public property. Whereas if it was private property, then yeah, you have rules, you have the kinds of speech or discussions that are permitted, and the ones that are would be deemed degenerate, not permitted, right? The same thing, like you live in an Amish community and they have their own kind of things that they would rather discuss, or they have like things that they don't want to have introduced, like technology or whatnot. You know, you have the same kind of parameters, and many of these societies you would be, right, private. So really, it's not just like a free speech, it's just a property rights issue, right? It's like the movie theater saying, yeah, you're not allowed to, you know, yell fire, as the common saying goes, while the movie's playing. But because there's no, because public property, you know, it's not privatized, yeah, it comes with the mixed bag of all the horrible things with it as well.
Yeah, mostly horrible. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, the you know, it is a property rights thing, and you know, these are situations where, you know, especially when you're talking about this online type of stuff, whether it's, you know, whether it's words, emojis, or whatever, you know, because then you get into it, the whole realm of that. It's like, well, okay, the person's making the comment or posting the comment or whatever, or the emojis or whatever it is, from their private property, you know, onto the public, I guess, quote unquote, public space of the internet, which nobody technically owns. And then, you know, and even if government regulates it, it's still not, you know, if you put it in the current paradigm, then you have to deal with all that stuff, and then you deal with free speech. But that's still not a free speech issue, to me. You know, for people to even argue that is just, it to me is silly, because it's like, well, it really has nothing to do with that, because the government, unless the government is trying to stop them, like if the government tries to stop you, then yes, the government is impeding your free speech by their own rules. Because they're stopping you from saying it, you know. And as far as, you know, threats go, like I said, if they took the explicit threats of horrible things that would happen to, say, I don't know, people like me and my children, half as seriously as they take some of these picture threats, then I might be a little more inclined to listen. But because it overall seems to be, you know, definitely depends on who the threats are about that matters to them, it's all BS.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
So we're back, and we were talking about emojis and the law in the last segment or two. Shift gears a little bit here. Still talking about the law, though, and pretty close to my home. Actually, I guess pretty close, relatively close to you, too. One of the other horrible states, one of the more horrible states in the Union, New Jersey, is apparently trying to get ahead of the curve when it comes to creating more unnecessary laws. And the whole drone game, governments are obviously trying to regulate the heck out of that as it is already. But specifically in Jersey, now they want to actually outlaw flying drones when people are drunk or inebriated on some other substance, and quote, other behavior. I didn't realize drunk droning was that much of a problem. Apparently, in New Jersey, it either is, or at least the politicians perceive it to be one. So they're trying to get out there and ban this stuff already. This is crazy, man. Like, as if there aren't enough laws on the books, they want to do this, and like, you know, reading through the story, the only things that at least even make somewhat remote sense to me, but then they don't because there's already laws in place to take care of this stuff anyway, is like people using drones to get around restraining orders. I'm pretty sure there's other laws already in the books for violating this type of stuff, for violating restraining orders. So to add extra laws and extra, you know, just pages to the penal code, as it were, is just so unnecessary and just such busy work. And to me, just like it's redundant, you know, kind of like, you know, yeah. And flying them drunk in general, you know, to me, it's no different than driving a car drunk in general. Cause like the act of driving a vehicle inebriated or whatever, to me, is not a criminal act. You know, if you injure somebody in that process, then yes, that's a criminal act, but there's already laws against stuff like that, which is why I think some laws are, you know, a lot of laws are bad. Other ones are just redundant and ridiculous and completely unnecessary. And if nothing else, it's just to give government credit for doing something that they're not, you know, that they're not a problem they're not actually solving, but they can say, hey, I'm solving it.
Yeah. And how do you, how do you show that this a man or someone was flying a drone drunk, right? You know, is the drone, you know, staying out of line? Is it crossing the white line? Yeah. Is the chemtrail in the sky, you know, it's not in its correct lane. You know, it's I don't know how you'd be able to determine that, because it's not like the drone operator is, you know, obvious, you know, nearby, right? Because it's remote. You know, I think it's kind of difficult still to even trace a drone to the operator unless, you know, they have some kind of identifying marks on the drone itself. It seems kind of way out there. And especially, I remember reading this case about this guy from Arizona who was arrested, charged with drunk driving, even though his blood alcohol level had, you know, nothing in there, zero. You know, so there's a lot of weird stuff that they could just kind of make up on the spot, maybe just to, you know, press charges on you and we'll, you know, we'll drop some of these charges, you know, as long as you plead guilty to some of these. But yeah, it's, one of those things that's kind of getting out of control, it seems.
Yeah. And well, the thing with a law like this, if this were to get put in effect, you know, number one, like you said, not only would it be in general, would it be difficult to prove, but for me, like as soon as you started talking about that, my first thought went to, well, of course it would be difficult to prove. However, this would be an extremely useful tool for them because it, you know, having a law like this in place just opens the door for them to be for the police to essentially just search anyone who they catch flying a drone because they can make some claim that the drone is acting erratically according to their perception, and that just would give them, you know, open door policy to search these people, you know. And if you're talking about flying under the influence, as it were, in this situation, you know, when it comes to driving under the influence in a lot of states, you know, they're making it easier and easier for the cops to actually just, you know, if you refuse, they can, you know, in some places they can actually just like force take your blood and stuff like that. So, you know, that just opens the door to me. That just opens the door for that type of stuff to happen, for somebody just standing in a park flying a drone, you know, basically be tackled and be like, oh, you have to prove that you are not inebriated. And the only way you can do that is basically just, you know, giving us your blood.
I think it's hilarious that it highlights drones are smuggling drugs into prisons. The drones are, I guess, flying over these penitentiaries and just, you know, dropping off their payloads at night, I guess, into the prison yard and cell phones, yeah, and everything. Yeah, we're always kind of curious, like, how do they get this stuff inside, right?
Yeah, exactly. and the best part about that is if you're gonna play in the current paradigm and if, you know, if you're going to work under the assumption that the law works as the way they claim it does, flying illegal substances into a state correctional facility would be a no-no. But, you know, the law, they'll put this out there because it'll, you know, it scares up, you know, more interest for the ever failing drug war, and just keeps, you know, keeps people scared and be like, oh, look, we have to keep the bad stuff away from the bad people. You know, we're just doing it for your safety type of thing. But they, of course, will not mention the fact that in order for that type of thing to happen, you know, that almost definitely some guards have to be in on that to be able to facilitate that stuff actually making it inside the prison. You know, right. Getting it dropped into the prison yard is one thing, but actually, like, you know, but they don't want to talk about that. Right. They're not gonna punish their own. They're gonna try to punish the people who are only trying to provide a service for people who are locked in there. Most, you know, in plenty of cases, people themselves that are locked in there for a victimless crime of their own, you know, are just trying to get by while being stuck in that cage for some victimless crime. And so instead of punishing the people, the state employees that are facilitating this, what they consider bad behavior, they're just going to punish the other people who are just trying to provide a service, an actual service for people.
Right. I'm curious about the restraining order thing, though. Are people actually using drones to get around a restraining order? I mean, what are the drones carrying? You know, are they creating love notes? Is this like one of those relationship restraining orders, a peace order? What are they? Are they just are they following the person around on a drone?
I thought about that too, and you know, that's why my first thought was like, I did think about like the following thing, and it's like, okay, if that's what they're doing, then can't that just be chalked up to a stalking charge then, if you're going to go that legal route? Why does it have to be additionally like to focus on drones? Because, you know, for me, anytime any law gets talked about and gets proposed, my initial, when a lot of people, you know, the average person will look at it and try to figure out the good that it does, you know, my initial reaction is usually to try to figure out what doors it opens for down the road, you know, like what liberties are at risk later on by what they're doing now in the name of safetyness type of deal. Right. So like this, if it was, you know, if it was a law specifically about these specific cases, like, okay, you know, we're making this to take care of the things that could happen with the situations with like the restraining order, you know, like that, or as ridiculous as the drug war is and all that stuff, like, okay, if that's your laws on the books right now, like, okay, if you're going to deal with it specifically about the correctional facilities, although that, of course, you know, again, they make that the worst crime of all, because that was the one that was going to be a third degree crime, I believe, is the ones if you're flying in anywhere near a correctional facility. And it's not even being caught in the act of, not even them catching your drone actually dropping something and then being, you know, assuming they're able to trace it all the way back to you, inside a correctional facility. It's surveilling a correctional facility, which again opens the door for anybody who happens to be anywhere near a correctional facility with a drone, even if they just stumble upon that area and aren't even aware that the correctional facility is there. If that drone, if their drone can get traced back to them, they can end up being arrested for under that charge, surveilling this, and then they'll have to go out of their way to prove themselves innocent of the fact that they were just like hanging out in the woods playing with their brand new drone that they just got for Christmas or something, you know, like, you know, like I said, that's why my mind immediately goes to, what does this open the door to?
Right. And if there is a drone that is following you, can you shoot it down? Right. If it's on your property. Right. I think there's some places where it's illegal to even shoot down a drone if it's on your property, if it's flying above your property. And you can get arrested for it. I think I remember hearing about a case in like California that happening. Somebody shot down a drone that was just flying right over his property, like over his house. And I just shot it down and I was arrested. I think this that's kind of happened a couple times across the country. So I would say, like, if it was legal, right? I mean, if it's on your property flying around, you should be able to knock it out of the sky, I would say, right? I don't know to what extent your property would be like maybe airspace, right? You know, does your property go over, 50 feet in the sky, right? You know, in that case, could you do the same thing with government drones flying around your property?
Yeah, well, that's I've heard of some cases like that too, where people have done it. Although I've heard other cases, thankfully, where people have been able to do it successfully. I think one of them actually was a government drone too. But yeah, it depends on where you are, because I mean, I'm pretty sure it's illegal here in New York. Because I mean, hey, you can't even physically remove trespassers from your own property here. Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF. Because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
And we're back for the final segment. Got a little redemption of the third act here. And this story I actually stumbled across on theantimedia.com, and it talks about, the title is actually, a cannabis company offers a brilliant solution to the opioid crisis. trade your drugs for weed. and it goes on to talk about the, there's this company in Oregon, what's it, Kaya Holdings, which is the first publicly traded company to open and operate a medical cannabis dispensary, is trying to set up a program where it's literally going to be asking people to bring their different types of opioids in and trade it for their, you know, legal, as whatever that word is worth to you, but their legal cannabis, in an effort to try to curb the crisis, because it has been shown there are people that, you know, have been able to get off opioids, you know, some type of opioid addiction, by using marijuana. And there is, you know, there's plenty of evidence now too, where in a lot of the places where they've finally gotten around to legalizing it in the different states, the opioid use in those states has dropped since the legalization, you know. So there does seem to be an awful lot of correlation between these things, you know, for people who may have been using it, and maybe not even like the hardcore addicts, just people using it as a way to get by, you know, for, you know, little things. Because I've known plenty of people who use even heroin like recreationally and live completely normal lives, you know, have jobs, function, and all that stuff. But when it becomes a lot easier to get something else, say cannabis instead, yeah, plenty of people just switch over to that. So there does seem to be a lot of evidence for that. So I think this is a wonderful thing. And I hope that the government in Oregon doesn't find a way to get in the way of them doing this. Because, again, this is a private company that is going out of their way to try to start a program to try to correct a problem they see. They're, you know, they view the opioid problem as an epidemic, and they want to do something about it. So here they are, willing to offer people their product for free in return for them just handing over stuff that will likely, I guess, get, I assume, you know, or at least the assumption would be that it would be destroyed. So nobody else would be using it. I don't know. Sounds like a win-win to me. What do you think, Hal?
It's a problem here in Virginia as well. There's been a lot of opioid-related deaths in the past couple months. I think it's like, what, 75% of all like drug overdoses are from opiates here in Virginia, especially like around Williamsburg and everything. Yeah, so it'd be something pretty cool to see how it works out over there and eventually reach over here. I mean, you see the effects of how Portugal has treated addiction and the drug problem they used to have. You know, over a decade ago, they decriminalized all drugs, and so every single drug across the board in terms of usage rates went down. Diseases associated with sheer needles went down, and the deaths as well. You know, I believe there's more cannabis users per rate per capita there than cocaine users here. And so you find that, you know, what these people need were not cages, were not bars, you know, life sentences sometimes for people here. It's just help. And it's pretty cool to see this business, this people coming up and serving an alternative to that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I love the Portugal example, because it's, you know, people always say, well, this would happen. And it's funny, because I used to make that argument in favor of decriminalizing it even before I was an anarchist. But even before I had found out what had actually happened in Portugal, because what I had said that I believed would happen is actually what got proved out there. Like, there's, you know, you decriminalize this stuff, and there's usually an initial increase because it opens the door for people who have always been curious but have been too afraid of the legal aspect, so they stayed away from it. So people will experiment, but most of those people just go, eh, it's not for me, and then afterwards don't continue doing it at all. So that's why you see the decrease in use, and, you know, a shift to other more, I guess, safer alternatives like cannabis, like you said. There, you know, more people shift to that. You know, that just seemed like the natural thing to me that would happen. And sure enough, once I learned about it, it's like, oh yeah, look at that real time example. It's exactly what would happen. So,
all right.
Anyway, this is worms.